Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show that focuses on people and organizations making a big difference in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan, and joining us right now is the Dallas coordinator for Buddy Up Tennis, part of the Buddy Up for Life organization. How you doing, Shel Harper?
I'm doing great, Chris. I'm excited to visit with you about Buddy Up.
I can't wait to talk to you about it, and in particular because October, as you emailed to me a little earlier, ironically, October is Down Syndrome Awareness Month. Can you talk about Buddy Up for Life and how it works with those who are dealing with Down syndrome?
Sure. Well, the organization mission for Buddy Up for Life is that we strive to impact lives through really three pillars of impact: promoting greater health and wellness, cultivating increased independence, and fostering meaningful friendships for all individuals with Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
The organization actually started in 2008 with just Buddy Up Tennis, one of the programs, with a mother, her son, who was three at the time, and he wanted to learn to play tennis. And the family would go to their country club to play tennis, and the three-year-olds would tag along. And a coach took great interest in him, and it started with, you know, Will Gibson hitting bubbles with his tennis racket, and has evolved over the years. There are now over 25 locations across the country, and the program has expanded. You know, not only we in Dallas, we offer Buddy Up Tennis and we offer Buddy Up Fitness, and I can tell you about both, and as well as a friendship program called Buddy Up Connections.
Oh,
but
okay.
At the home base in Columbus, they're even experimenting with things that will help our, we call them athletes, but as the program expands, athletes sounds like a little bit of a misnomer, because they're also working on cooking skills and financial skills and communication skills, and they're piloting those programs in Columbus.
That is so fantastic.
Yeah, it is really cool. It's a wonderful community, and I'm thrilled to have immersed myself in it.
So you develop brave athletes on the court. You help with their self-awareness, their self-worth, the confidence to conquer challenges and achieve their fullest potential off the court. So basically, this is such a great thing for them because it shows them the courage, and it shows them what they can do, anything they set their minds to.
Absolutely. I mean, tennis, I've played tennis all my life. It's a wonderful sport. I love it. But in this case, while we are developing tennis players, tennis is really the vehicle to help them build more important life skills. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, the self-confidence, the self-esteem, building friendships, just being able to participate on a team like typical kids do. And since we launched in Dallas in 2019, and so we have some athletes who've been with us literally since day one. And to have those relationships bloom and see the athletes develop over that time period, is just incredibly inspiring and motivating to everyone involved.
That's excellent. So what are the age groups for the Buddy Up athletes, those that participate?
Well, they have to be five years old to start.
Mm-hmm.
And we have athletes right now ranging from 5 to 47.
Nice.
That participate in our programs. So, you know, some people think it's just children, but it is certainly not. And from speaking to many of the parents and caregivers for these athletes, sometimes I think it's of even greater value for those. I think they get to stay in the public school system till, you know, 21
mm-hmm.
or so.
Yeah.
But it's after that age that there's really an absence of programming and things for them to do. So I think the program is valuable to all of them, but a lot of our slightly older athletes appreciate the socialization and programming more that they don't really have once they leave the school system.
So, Cheryl, you were saying that you've been playing tennis all of your life, so I'm assuming you're one of the coaches. Can you talk about the coaches that are involved? And if you're not a coach, that's fine, too. But what about they're doing? And I understand there's a certain tennis curriculum specifically created for the athletes.
There absolutely is. I am a lifelong tennis player, and I actually, when I was starting this, I thought I would be more of a coach than I am. I end up being more of just the overall coordinator.
Okay.
But I do some coaching, and I pop on and off the court all the time. But we have grown so fast, started out large, and have grown so fast that the coordinator role really absorbs me.
Mm-hmm.
Our coaches, however, are many of them are teaching tennis professionals, and if not, they are pretty advanced players, and if not, they are enthusiastic coach volunteers who have been trained in our curriculum, because there is great care given to the curriculum. At our 90-minute clinics, we start with 30 minutes of fitness
mm-hmm.
That is broken into four segments. We call it our ABCs of fitness, with A being agility, B being balance and coordination. B is ball control, C is coordination and balance, and the S is strength and speed. And so the athletes rotate through those stations for 30 minutes, and then we do get into tennis for an hour and go through all of the major strokes. And with each stroke, there are a variety of different drills that are done, but we try to use a common language where the stroke has been broken down into basic steps
mm-hmm.
to help them. And it helps us because we have a common language that we use, because we have over 500 registered volunteers. So different people are there on different days, but we use a common language so that the athletes get the same lessons and verbiage reinforced to them. And it's just tons of fun. It's a high energy, kind of somewhat chaotic, but in a good way, clinic, and lots of laughing and friendships and lots of celebrations of very small steps forward. We always have expectations for our athletes, and the expectations are very individualized. So for more advanced athletes, it may be celebrating when they hit four forehands in a row. For less developed athletes, it may be making contact with the ball.
Right.
And we celebrate both just as much. There's a whole lot of high-fiving and jumping and cheering.
You mentioned the celebrations. I got to break in because I was hosting an event, and I found out that a lot of Down syndrome athletes or Down syndrome kids and adults, they love to dance and they love to celebrate.
Yeah.
So I know that's got to be an amazing sight.
It really is. When you mentioned the dancing, when we were operating on a virtual basis through COVID, we had a couple of Zoom dances.
Ah.
and it was tons of fun. And my husband served as the DJ, and I was using the Zoom camera to spotlight different athletes. And I mean, it was a constant rotation of who would be featured on Zoom. And I guarantee you, when the camera turned on them, every one of them was performing.
Oh, there was the energy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was tons of fun. It was tons of fun.
We're talking with Cheryl Halperin. She is the Dallas coordinator for Buddy Up Tennis. And we were talking about, you mentioned there's like 500 volunteer coaches. Is it volunteers or volunteer coaches?
Volunteers.
Volunteers.
We have about 10 coaches that are trained and ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when you have the different athletes involved in the matches or even just the clinics, how much one-on-one attention do they receive?
Oh, it's total one-on-one.
Oh, okay.
That is kind of the beauty of Buddy. I mean, we don't have 500 volunteers at any one clinic.
Right.
But, no, at our clinics, that's part of the Buddy Up.
Mm-hmm.
Every athlete is paired with either one or two buddies, and they are devoted to that athlete for the 90-minute clinic. The coaches are leading the activities, but those buddies serve as that athlete's role model, peer, cheerleader, coach, teammate, friend, you know, all those things.
Yeah.
They are there to support that athlete in any way they can and to adapt any of the exercises or drills to be both challenging but achievable for the athlete.
Now, you mentioned the exercise. Let's go there for a minute, because I understand quite a few of the athletes, even though they're in shape to a degree, they've become even in better shape, and some of them have actually lost weight in a good way.
Yeah, I think that is very true. I mean, we certainly don't measure that. I have had one mother that comes to mind whose son had Down syndrome but then was in a horrible car accident, and she found our program. They're actually involved in Buddy Up Fitness.
Mm-hmm.
But when they first joined us, they even had to take an elevator to get to the second floor gym where we do our workout. And, you know, it was slow going, but he gradually engaged in more and more of the activities. And she just sent me a text and photos within the last month saying, you know, that he was now participating in several Special Olympic sports and that she viewed Buddy Up.
Wow.
Starting point for that.
That is fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is really great to see. And again, we just make sure that we move forward in the way that is best for each athlete, because again, different things look like success.
Exactly.
We have one of our younger athletes who is both Down syndrome and has autism, and often doesn't participate in the group activities. He's kind of off to the side with his buddies. And, you know, I talk to his mom every clinic, and we are thrilled because, like this last clinic, he actually was standing up and doing activities, you know, for 45 minutes, whereas before he would sit on the court and kind of roll the ball back and forth with someone. So, you know, we have, you know, a full spectrum from that up to athletes. You know, our strongest tennis player. I mean, he can whack the ball.
Woo.
You know, we're all ducking because he can whack the ball. He's also a very proficient juggler. But there is a full range of participants, and each one is just, you know, charming. I had really no contact with the Down syndrome community to speak of before this program. And I can't tell you how much each athlete touches my heart.
That is fantastic. So I was going to go there next. How did you become involved with Buddy Up? Can you tell us your story?
Yeah. Well, it's pretty interesting, I think. I've been involved in a lot of different nonprofits and community service over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But I had finished up a board term as president of a large organization, and when that was over, I'm like, wow, I have a little more time on my hands. And I was, you know, trying to figure out where I wanted to focus next. And as a tennis player, during the U.S. Open in 2018, on the NBC National News, there was a feature on Buddy Up Tennis because they had been named the United States Tennis Association Adaptive Program of the Year, and they did a clinic in New York at the U.S. Open.
Wow. And you know what? It's so fresh on a lot of people's minds, the U.S. Open. Even the casual sports fan is familiar that was Serena Williams' swan song a couple of months ago.
Sure. You know, but I mean, as a tennis player, I'm always interested in tennis things. And mm-hmm. I saw that feature and I thought, wow, I've never really been able to merge my passion for community service with my passion for tennis. I want to go check this organization out and see if I can volunteer. And my husband laughed at me because I promptly, you know, trotted upstairs to my computer and logged in and found them and was dismayed that there wasn't a chapter in Dallas. So I emailed the founder and said, you know, I'd love to get this started here. What do I need to do? And, you know, she doesn't know me or anything.
Sure. About. You just reached out.
Yeah. And her first question is, oh, you know, do you have a child with Down syndrome? And I said, no. And, you know, she's cousin, friend, whatever. I said, no, not really. I'm just, you know, so impressed with this and I'd love to learn more. And she was a little reluctant at first, like she wouldn't give me the password to the training things on the website. I think she wanted to make sure I was serious and committed.
Yes.
Because I think I'm still the only coordinator in the country who is not a family member
mm-hmm.
of someone with Down syndrome. But I
that just shows where your heart is. And then if your heart became even larger because yeah, you started working with all the kids and adults.
I'm totally sucked in, I will say. But it's also been an interesting, I think, adventure for the national organization because I approached it a bit differently as a tennis player and my profession is in marketing. And once I was able to connect with the Down Syndrome Guild of Dallas here, who's mm-hmm. a great partner to us, they had actually explored Buddy Up Tennis, but didn't have a couple of years prior, but didn't have the manpower to do it. And, you know, I assured them that if they could help connect me to the athletes, you know, because I didn't really have a way to reach them.
Right, because like you said, you don't have anyone in your family that was Down syndrome, yeah.
And they've been wonderful partners. They've publicized it. They their board gives us a small grant, a nice grant each year. And so then I went about building this through my tennis connections from having played in Dallas tennis leagues for over 20 years.
And that sounds like it was a perfect match.
It really, I thought so. and it really has grown. We now have a lot of Young Men's Service League and National Charity League support with, you know, mothers and sons and mothers and daughters who want to volunteer with us. And, you know, when we launched, we were actually the largest launch in the organization's history. And within a year had become the largest organization in terms of numbers of athletes served and numbers of volunteers in the country.
Very impressive.
So it's been great.
So obviously you've got a lot of friends and contacts because otherwise you wouldn't be able to grow it like this and you wouldn't be able to sustain it like this because I'm very impressed the way you've been able to put this thing together because you were able to connect a lot of people, and I think it's because of your background and your love of tennis.
It is, and it's the kind of thing, you know, it's so amazing for me to see people that I have competed with and against on the court and see how they act and respond with these athletes.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause there are some surprises, you know, where you go, man, that I know this – person is a hardcore competitor and they're not very friendly on the court.
Right.
You know, when they're
fighting. Oh, yeah, they're so competitive and they don't show the loving side.
Oh, my gosh. And you get them out there and it's just, it's pretty phenomenal. And I do think while the program, my highest priority is always that the athletes mm-hmm. have a great experience and feel good. But I also want the buddies to have, that's what we call our
sure.
volunteers.
Yeah.
I want our buddies to have a great experience and you can see their eyes open. You know, I have people who come up after clinic and go, thank you so much. This is such a grounding kind of experience for me. And I want, you know, if it's a mother, you know, I want my teenager to come out here. I think it's so important for their development and, you know, with inclusivity being such, you know, mm-hmm. such an important thing for most of us in today's world. They're like, they need this. And so I think it serves a great purpose for our volunteers as well.
So we're talking about all the different buddies, the different athletes with Down syndrome. Can you, and you were talking about the age groups, but let's talk about boys and girls. How many boys, is it more boys involved or more girls involved, or is it pretty much equal?
Oh, gosh. I think we have slightly more girls as athletes,
mm-hmm.
slightly more. And I do think our volunteers lean more toward females.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure why. I mean, you know, we can only offer our clinics at one. We've been offering our clinics at 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoons because when we started, that was when we could get court space and when it wasn't competing directly with the biggest tennis leagues in Dallas. And
right.
I had done a little
availability
survey to people as to when it was, you know, you never get
yeah.
the time for everyone. But I do think, the Cowboys schedule.
I was gonna say that here in Texas, you got football, and football is Dallas Cowboys on Sundays.
It sometimes competes with that, you know. But fortunately, a lot of the schools require their teams to have service hours, and this is just so rewarding. And not to bash any of the wonderful other opportunities there are in Dallas to volunteer, but it's so hands-on and so personal versus, you know, doing something where, and I've done this and I support this organization, but, you know, you go to the food bank and you sort and pack food, and that's wonderful, but you don't deliver the food. You don't
right.
see the individuals who are benefiting from
mm-hmm.
it. And so it's often real eye-opening, again, for people to actually, they are the service. Our volunteers do have to be age 14 or older, and I sometimes have people sign up and who are ready to volunteer. You know, they're like, it's a very mature 12-year-old.
Oh, my. That's actually excellent, but I understand.
Yeah, I mean, it's a national requirement. I don't want to be in the position of judging that this 12-year-old is mature enough and this one
exactly.
is not.
Exactly.
You know, I often get the question of, do you have to be a tennis player? And quite frankly, I would rather, much rather, have someone with a great attitude and enthusiasm who knows nothing about tennis than a very skilled tennis player who really isn't interested in being there.
I like what you're saying, because that means a lot. It's like, okay, the buddy can actually learn the tennis as well as the athlete with Down syndrome.
Sure, sure. And really, again, when we realize that the bigger goal is that self-esteem and friendship and enthusiasm, it doesn't take tennis to do that. Again, if we love people who are both
right.
enthusiastic and tennis players, but if I have to make a choice, I would opt for the enthusiasm and energy, you know, every time in our little orientation with, but we do have a full training session, the first clinic of each season. But we also have volunteers who, for whatever reason, can't do that, and I give them a quick 15-minute orientation the first time they come.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we talk about for that buddy role is that there are five E's we want to have them bring to the court every time, and that's empowerment, you know, having to do with adjusting exercises and drills to match their athlete's skill level. But we say empowerment, enthusiasm, energy, engagement. We really encourage our buddies to visit with and get to know their athletes. And sometimes that's, you know, kind of interesting for them because our athletes are, in general, much more receptive and expressive.
Mm-hmm.
They definitely understand what is being said, but they may not be able to articulate and respond in a way that someone
right.
is accustomed to.
Exactly. So, that's one of the things that people don't understand about anyone with Down syndrome. They may, you know, from afar, and if they've never had interactions with them, they may think that they have to speak slowly or they may. No, they understand everything you're saying, everything you're doing.
Right. Well, or people speak more loudly.
Right. You know, they're not hard of hearing.
Yeah. Well, some of them are, but that's not generally the issue.
But yeah, exactly.
I'll come back to that in just a second. Our fifth E that I don't want to forget is encouragement.
Right.
But when you just referenced the heart of hearing, I mean, part of the challenge for these athletes, you know, in terms of physical development, while, again, they're all individuals and some are more impacted than others by Down syndrome. I mean, there is a spectrum,
mm-hmm.
but they can have hearing and vision problems, problems with their heart. They also typically have weaker core muscles, which can affect their speech and their fine motor skills and their gross motor skills. So, you know, that makes them a little different to communicate with. I often find myself saying, I am so sorry that I didn't understand what you said.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me again?
Right.
They often do have, you know, delayed intellectual development, shorter attention span, and they can be very impulsive at times. We laugh with our youngest athletes in training. I was kind of mortified the first time I heard this, but the coaches who are from Columbus who trained us and have incredible experience with this said, if you have a runner, and they said, there will be athletes, and they were right, who just for no reason that you can discern, all of a sudden go running off. and you know, so they instructed us on how to corral them back. You don't chase them. You have to run around, get in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had specific instructions for how to bring them back to the group activity.
But be ready. But be ready because they can run from you.
And then on the other end, again, the first time I heard the term, I was mildly offended, but then it seemed to be greatly accepted by everyone in the Down syndrome community. But they said, you will have athletes who flop and drop. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, and what's flop and drop?
Flop and drop, man, is when you sit down and you just don't want to do anything.
so they're actually doing what a lot of us think we want to do.
Well, I want to come back to that, Chris, because that's one of my main learnings. But so when an athlete does that, you know, our first inclination might be to kind of like go, you know, come on, Chris, stand up and grab your hand and try to pull you
right.
up. But there's much greater success if you will sit down with them and get on their eye level and say, hey, can you give me a high five? And then can you give me a high five on your knees? And can you give me a high five up top? And you stand up with them.
Yes, I see what you did.
So there's a lot of things like that that work, but your comment just reminded me of probably one of my greatest personal learnings from this whole experience is that, you know, our athletes experience the full range of emotions that we all experience.
Right.
But they don't have the social filters that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're really happy with you, I've had athletes like that, I mean, walk up, hug, and latch on. And they're
and won't let go.
Yeah. And it's wonderful, but you're like, you know, someone else who's happy to see you might give you a big smile and a quick hug.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, when they're loving on you, they're loving on you. But if they're not happy with you, whereas most of us would, you know, might sulk or fake it, they'll tell you.
And they'll let you know right then and there.
Oh, they let you know. I mean, I've had volunteers, you know, volunteer buddies who may have worked with an athlete three or four times and always had fun. And when they walk up that day, the athlete goes, "I don't want to work with her. I want some," you know, and you're just like, oh gosh.
Yeah.
Why? And there's no,
yeah,
you know,
they're direct.
Again, they're very direct. And, you know, we coach our buddies not to take it personally if they ask. Because if they're not in the mood, it's going to be, you know, you're going to have to work hard to get them on the court. And it may not happen, but it's not the volunteer's fault.
You know what? I got to tell you a story because you made me start grinning about something that happened with me. So I'm emceeing this nonprofit event for some individuals with Down syndrome, and everybody's having a great time. And the whole thing was a success. But at one point, you have the live auction, and so different people are waving their hands because they're bidding on.
I can imagine where this is going. Yeah.
So, I'm not even the live auctioneer. I'm just kind of helping out on the stage. And then
call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Someone says, oh, well, they're being real nice. They say, okay, you can't raise your hands because we're raising this money for you. And then it happened a little bit later. I said, well, you got to make sure you keep your hands down because they're raising the money for you. A little bit later on, while they were dancing, one of the Down syndrome individuals, a very young person, she says, right, excuse me, sir, we have bank accounts too. We can bid.
Yes.
And I said, you're right. I am so sorry.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, and again, as long as everyone has the right attitude, I mean, I had an athlete this last week who, for whatever reason, I believe she's 22. She was not into it that day. And I was trying to coax her onto the court, you know, just going, hey, you know, why don't you go out there and see if you can get four forehands or whatever? Because I hop around kind of troubleshooting.
Right.
And she looked at me. She said, I'm an adult. I know you're an adult. You know, and
right,
when I talked to her parents afterwards, they said, we hear that all the time.
Just like, you know, yeah, I can imagine. By the way, we're talking with Cheryl Halpern. She's the Dallas coordinator for Buddy Up Tennis. And you mentioned earlier when we first started talking about the other programs with Buddy Up. You've got the tennis, you've got the fitness. You mentioned, did you mention financial literacy?
They're piloting that program in Columbus. So
okay.
I've not participated in that. Columbus is where we're based, and that's where they pilot the different programs. In Dallas, we have Buddy Up Tennis, Buddy Up Fitness, and then there's a national program called Buddy Up Connections.
It's kind of like a
secret pal program.
Okay.
If you will, we pair buddies and athletes, and it's often over the summer. where they can get together and just do things on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And they build that friendship, whether it started during the pandemic, but it was so popular that we've continued after that.
You know, it's funny you mention that, because a lot of people we have on the show, we'll talk about how they endured the pandemic, and we're on the backside mm-hmm. of this thing now, but the lessons that they've learned, or the quote-unquote pivot that they made. So this is one of those things that you said, you know what, we're going to keep doing this part because it really worked out well. This is something we didn't expect.
Absolutely. I mean, we wanted to make, none of us knew how long the pandemic would last, but we knew we wanted to keep people engaged. And for our athletes in particular, social isolation can be a real issue.
Oh, yeah.
And so
mental wellness is part of physical wellness.
Oh, absolutely. So, again, we would pair people up for, an 8-week or a 10-week period. And it was up to them whether they were very creative when they got together virtually. I mean, the Buddy Up National provided us all kinds of resources where you can say, oh, you like baseball. Well, you know what? We can do virtual tours of all the Major League Baseball fields in the country because they were available online.
Yeah.
Or we can travel, or we can do puzzles.
Sure.
And then some of our athletes and buddies did get together. They'd get together at a park and do some kind of science experiment, or, just play on the playground or whatever. And that kept them having some social contact, but without the exposure that would be inherent. I mean, in our clinics, we're all together.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We are all together. There's a lot of people.
Person to person.
And there's a lot of person to person. And we were, our athletes were among the more vulnerable populations during the pandemic. So did not want to take any chances. So mm-hmm. we were virtual from March of 2020 through August of 2021.
Woo. So my goodness,
it was quite rewarding that when we opened it back up in September 2021, we still were, booked to the gills.
We were
pretty much maxed out.
Right, you didn't lose anybody. Probably just gained some more people as well.
Yeah, well, we're always gaining, which mm-hmm. is nice because, our athletes certainly go through life transitions as well. One of our early athletes who was really very, very involved for the first, 2 years, good for her, but she is now in a nursing assistant program.
Mm.
So we're delighted to see her growth, but we don't get to see her on the court too much anymore.
Right.
But that's the kind of progress you want to see. It's really, we are one athlete, and you'll get a kick out of this, and I know it's fine to say her name. The first athlete that enrolled was 5 years old, and her name is Sloane Stephens, spelled the same way as tennis player.
I had the pleasure of meeting this tennis player, Sloane Stephens, so this is like
I have tried to connect with her on social media and saying, oh, look, we have our precious little athlete.
Uh-huh. So what happened with the first ever tennis player in your organization, Sloane Stephens? I got to hear the rest of this story.
Oh, well, she still is with us.
Nice.
I mean, all the way. She, has moved up. When we put people in groups on the court, it's our 5 to 9-year-olds. Are on one court, regardless of their skill level, just because they have kind of a different curriculum where mm-hmm. fitness is more incorporated into the tennis. And then once they hit 10, they move up and are broken out into different, skill levels, so that the more advanced athletes are working on slightly different things than the less advanced athletes. And they use different tennis balls even, because there are different compressions of tennis balls.
Right.
And our youngest athletes use foam balls, and then there's a group that uses, they're called red balls, and mm-hmm. a group that uses orange balls. So the curriculum is based on that. But Sloane is still with us, man. She's
That's
out
great.
There, and she's loving it. And, I mean, she, you know, she hits the ball. She moved up because she was capable of doing that, and she just jumped right into the next group and is doing great.
That is fantastic. Now, at the top of the show, you mentioned that October is Down Syndrome Awareness Month, and this has been a great conversation because I think a lot of people learn more about Down syndrome, and maybe if they knew nothing about it, they actually opened up their minds and found out some new things. So tell me in particular, what's going on with Buddy Up Tennis in Dallas over the next couple of months? Is there anything you need people to know about?
Oh, well, we always welcome new volunteers.
Okay.
And so, you know, I would encourage anyone who's interested to go to buddyupforlife.org, and that's for F-O-R, buddyupforlife.org, and check it out. But we have our ongoing tennis clinics on Sunday afternoons. In fact, we always call our Halloween clinic. This year it's on October 30th, our Halloween spooktacular clinic. And buddies and athletes to come out in costume. Mm-hmm. And that's always a lot of fun. This Sunday, if it doesn't rain, although there's an 80% chance, we actually have some special guest volunteers in that the TCU Women's Triathlon Team.
Nice.
Is coming up for, as a group to volunteer with us.
Very so, nice. Go Frogs.
Yeah, we're excited to have them. They don't know it yet, but they may if they hear this. When we get to all of our fitness drills, they're going to be called on heavily to demonstrate. because with virtually everything we do, we go through a process where it's I demonstrate, then we do it together, meaning, you know, you and the athlete, and then the athlete does it. So there's a learning curve there, and so we're going to call heavily on those women that we know are phenomenal athletes to have them show us what a frog jump looks like or whatever.
Right. They can do it all. They're triathletes. They can do it all.
Yeah, exactly. That's my thought. But really for the remainder of this year, we'll have our clinics through the end of November, or we may have to push into 1 week in December if we do get rained out this week. And then we'll take a little break for the holidays, and then we'll pick up since we do our tennis clinics on outdoor courts. Mm-hmm. And the weather in Dallas is not necessarily great for tennis January, February.
So well, yeah.
We move indoors to a big gymnasium. We partner with the Episcopal School of Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been wonderful partners. That's where we have our outdoor clinics. And then in the winter and then in the heart of the summer when it's too hot for our athletes to be out there, we also go indoors and just do fitness and not tennis.
That is fantastic. That is absolutely fantastic.
They've been a wonderful partner. I know I've mentioned that the Down Syndrome Guild of Dallas mm-hmm. is an incredible partner. We also have wonderful partners in Tennis Competitors of Dallas, TCD, which is a really big tennis league. And they've always been very generous with their support, as has been the Sandlot Children's Charity.
Yes, my buddy Jared Sandler is the one that told me about you.
Yeah, Jared's been great. They came out and filmed with us, I think it was last October or so. They came out for a day and filmed and interviewed, you know, parents and athletes and different volunteers. But they're a great organization as well and support so many wonderful children's, mainly sports activities in the area.
Yes. Well, Cheryl, it's been a pleasure having you on Better Living. And you know we're going to have you on next spring. We got to talk again soon about everybody in the Down syndrome community and all the fine work you're doing and how the tennis is going.
You got it, Chris. It's been my pleasure.
And joining us right now is my favorite suicide prevention mental wellness advocate, Ms. Fonda Bryant. How you doing, Fonda?
I am doing well. How are you doing today, Chris?
I am doing wonderful, and I always enjoy talking to you, and everybody enjoys you having on the show because you not only have the information, but you break down the information about mental wellness and national suicide prevention and all these different things, and you do it so well. So thanks again for joining us.
Well, thank you for always having me. You know, Dallas is one of my favorite cities.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Now, let's go to what we're you got some new information. There's some new statistics that have come out because last month was National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. And then, and I know everybody did a great job with, you know, all the different conversations about mental wellness and suicide prevention. But then you brought to my attention some staggering statistics that have just come out. Can we start there?
Yes. You know, I've been working really hard. So many advocates and mental health and suicide prevention organizations, we've been working really hard, especially when COVID hit. We knew it was taking a toll on people's mental health, the isolation, the fear, all of that. So, you know, we amped it up. And after a 2 year, you know, after 2 years of suicide declining in 2019, and 2020, suicide is now on the rise. And the worst part is it always hits youth the hardest. And for youth, for young girls ages 10 to 14, they have the highest increase, followed by young males 15 to 24. So it's just very disheartening. We got the new 988 number, of course, but at the end of the day, as I always tell people, we need to do better on the front end with early detection, with stomping out the negative stigma around mental health and suicide, and also to be able to educate people so we won't have to use these tools for suicide prevention. I mean, we can use better tools if we did a better job. So it's very disheartening to be dealing with you know, these stats as hard as we're working. But I still think there's hope if we continue to recognize those stats and continue to embrace them and come up with ways to help people, we can still put a dent in the suicide and bring that rate back down.
Here are some of those stats you were talking about. Between 2020 and 2021, suicide deaths amongst girls ages 10 to 14 increased more than any other group, followed by teenage boys and young men ages 15 through 24, according to the new CDC report. And in 2021, the American Academy of Pediatrics declared a state of emergency concerning children's and adolescents' mental health. Can we put a lot of this on? I mean, one thing about teenagers and adolescents in particular, they have a lot of peer pressure. So can we put that these stats are, you know, trying to figure out why? Is a great deal of this the fact that during the pandemic, you mentioned there was a lot of virtual, not just virtual learning, where kids couldn't be in the same schools together, but they couldn't actually be with their friends. And I'm going to throw in this, and you tell me what you know, because you are in this world all the time as an advocate. How many kids, because of social media and everybody's got so much access to information nowadays, when the pandemic hit, that really, really scared them about their future? Do you think that might have played a part in it as well?
Oh, yeah, big time. I read a report not long ago, and I can't remember where I saw it, that they said that most youth have lost hope.
Yeah.
You know, once you lose hope, you just don't care anymore. And that's what has happened. You know, if you look at the news every day with what's going on in society, from gun violence to feeling uncomfortable about going to school to, you know, you're worried if your parents are going to have the money to take you to school because gas is so high or food is high. That takes a toll on students.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely.
Because they overthink things.
They overthink things all the time, and they live in the moment. They just live in that moment.
Yeah.
And it's very hard for them to see past that moment. So, yes, it really has taken a toll because, again, a lot of people have lost hope. You know, youth have lost hope. Where they used to say, oh, you know, youth are our future, a lot of youth don't see the future at all. They don't see it anymore.
They really don't. And it kind of explains why a lot of parents are really surprised that their kids have more interest in, you know, having a career as an influencer or someone that had like a temporary kind of job, maybe a Uber Eats or a Uber driver or a gig economy, as opposed to, well, I'm going to work at some organization, corporation, or, you know, a plant or factory for the next 10, 20 years and have a family. And kids today, Gen Z, they don't look at things like that. They look at things like, now, what can I do for me and my friends and our families right now?
Yes. We're such a self-absorbed culture, mm-hmm. you know, just the whole society. We're so self-absorbed. You know, I sometimes when I'm scrolling through Yahoo, just the stories, they're not stories. What does somebody have on today?
Right.
What is somebody
Who are you wearing?
Today? What are you wearing today? Oh, this looked great on this person
yeah.
today. Who cares? I mean, honestly, who cares? And you have so much of that now. It's useless news. And
right.
I'm not saying everything has
it's
to be
disposable
doom and gloom.
Information. It's clickbait.
It is. It's like, who cares?
Right. But but people, like I said, because so many things happen, like every week there's something else. There's another car wreck, or there's another, look what she was wearing, or look, those guys had a fight, or did you see the video of this situation that happened at a restaurant? It's like it's always coming at them, and it's disposable. And maybe there's a correlation a little bit with why they don't feel like the future's very bright. Or the future, they may not be around for the future, or they can't worry about the future.
Yes, and that's what's going on because, as I said, look what's going on in the Ukraine. And they keep talking about nuclear weapons and things like that. And see, none of the youth were around during the missiles of October. And I was born during that time, and I never will forget when Cuba had their missiles aimed at the United States.
This
and
is
I
the early 1960s with John
yes,
F. Kennedy.
In the 1960s, and my mom and those were terrified, you know. And I was a little girl, but I could still feel that panicking, and they were all afraid. And so you think about it now, you're talking about nuclear weapons and all of this stuff and what Putin is going on. And then, like I said, back in the day, I didn't have to worry about mass shootings in school. You just throw in where it was just on the news this week that they sentenced the young man to life in prison. You got all these tempests in a teapot, and these kids are afraid. They're afraid and they're scared, and you can't blame them because adults are going through the same thing. And it's like, if you talk to them and let them know, hey, you know, just, you know, we can get through this or whatever the case may be, these kids aren't really buying that anymore because they are afraid, and they go to social media for a lot of their news or for a lot of information, and that mm-hmm. information is out there, and it's really terrifying these kids, and they're so stressed out because I work at a high school every day, and I see it every single day.
Yes, you're an educator as well, so you are around a lot of kids, a lot of young adults. And have you noticed an uptick in a lot of young adults, especially coming off of this side of the pandemic, with self-medication? They'll do things to, they'll come to school in a daze.
Oh, my goodness. You know, it's really bad. And a lot of black males, unfortunately, are coming to school high every day. A lot of them are smoking weed. We've had a young lady that came to school several weeks ago that was drunk. Her dad knew she was drunk and let her come to school anyway. So that's how they're coping. And I talk to them. They come in my office, and I let them know, hey, when you sit up and smoke weed or drink and your brain hasn't fully developed until you're 25 years old, your brain, whatever you're doing, it takes a direct effect on it. And I read an article that said that for young people who smoke, especially smoke weed, and their brain hasn't fully developed and they're dealing with a mental health condition, it can cause psychosis. It can cause hallucinations, and it can cause early schizophrenia. It can start them on the path of schizophrenia. And they're shocked when I tell them that. And some of them will tell me, I want to stop, but I don't know how, or I don't know what to do. And it helps me when it's really not helping them. And that's another crisis in itself, the self-medicating that's going on.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the last time I talked to you was back in July. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, they transitioned to a 3-digit hotline, and that was the invention of the 988. You know, everybody's heard of 911. 988 came along, the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, to make it easier for people to get help. And they say that the calls into the hotline jumped 45% after its launch over the summer compared to the same time a year earlier. This is according to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And also, this was something that actually touched home a little bit to me, and I haven't told you this yet, Fonda. In 2021, the CDC report showed the suicide rate amongst men in the U.S. was 4 times higher than it was for women, a disparity that continues to grow. This is where I'm going with this. At the start of the NFL season, here in Dallas-Fort Worth, a member of the sports community, he was behind the scenes, but everybody knew him, and he had been involved with, you know, professional sports and high school and college sports down here for years in the media. behind the scenes. He took his own life, and he had a wife and two kids. And he actually reached out to me in June, and he was in a panic because I think he had developed the shakes or something. He thought he wouldn't be able to do his work properly. And then he calmed down, and I talked to him again 2 weeks before he took his own life. And everybody was so shocked and surprised. It was almost like he was at peace with the decision he had made, and he told no one until he did it. And you said you've heard these stories countless times because that's what you do. You're a suicide prevention advocate. And like I said, they even made mention of him, and I'm not going to say it on the air right here, but they made mention of him before a couple of games, you know, big games down here, moment of silence. And a lot of people didn't know that's how he passed, but he took his own life.
Yeah, that's something. And unfortunately, it happens way too often. You know, the thing is that society doesn't really realize how many people we lose every day. And that's why I always tell people that suicide is not a personal character flaw. It is a global health crisis. On average, in the United States, we lose about 130 Americans every day. And the thing is, when I call out these stats, first off, they're human beings.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing I want people to realize is the stats that I call out, as shocking as they are, they're underreported. So it's even worse than what I'm saying. So we lose 130 Americans a day. The thing that what has happened is suicide among veterans have dropped, but now it's back on the rise. So it's anywhere between, you know, they always like to say the 22, but it's more than 22 veterans that die every day. And this is what is so startling. More people in the United States die by suicide than car deaths and homicides. And, you know, this month is Breast Cancer Month.
Yes.
And the NFL is doing the Crucial Catch where they put all of the cancers together.
Yes.
Well, I just want your listeners to know something. And this is why I said it's such a big disparity between mental health and suicide prevention when it comes to cancer and any other physical condition. More people die worldwide to suicide than breast cancer and prostate cancer combined every 40 seconds. Every 40 seconds.
Wow. Wow.
But where's the empathy? Where's the compassion? Mm-hmm. And where's the let's do something?
Well, there are some stats that came out now that now 8 out of 10 Americans are interested in learning more about how they might be able to play a role in helping someone who may be suicidal. And that's why, another reason I have you on the show quite often, certified QPR instruction. There's a lot of people interested in learning QPR. Can you talk about that for a moment?
Oh, yeah. It's starting to pick up. I've had more and more people reaching out. QPR stands for Question, Persuade, Refer. In 2 hours, I can train anyone. In the time you watch a movie, I can train anyone how to recognize the signs of someone suicidal or someone in crisis, how to talk to them and help them to get help. Also, QPR suicide prevention training not only helps us to help someone else, it helps us to gauge our own mental health, which is a win-win. And going along with that survey that you talked about, which was great to hear, 94% of people who were surveyed, I think they surveyed like 2,000 people, believe suicide is preventable.
Yes.
It is preventable. It is preventable. And you know how they came up with QPR? It's the same initials as CPR, except
yes.
for the Q. CPR and QPR are the same because CPR is to help someone who's having a heart attack or stroke, someone who's in crisis physically. QPR is to help someone who is in a crisis but mentally, whether it's suicide or they're in crisis. And the thing is, I think one of the biggest points for a lot of people is they feel like, okay, if I help someone who's suicidal and they go on to die after I've helped them, it's my fault. No, it's not. Because if you say someone's life, if they have a heart attack or a stroke and they still code or down the road they die, is that your fault? No, it's not. It's the same thing with QPR. If someone, you say somebody's life and down the road they end up dying, that's not your fault. Because at the end of the day, we have to want to live. And we have to put in the work to live. So the thing is, QPR is a great entity. There's over 20,000 QPR instructors. And when I talked to Paul Quinnett, who started the QPR Institute a couple months ago, he told me that the data says out of the millions of people that we have trained, they haven't had one negative feedback that comes back to say that that training caused somebody to die by suicide. It is truly a lifesaver.
And finally, before we let you get out of here, you say you'd like to apply the social network theory to suicide prevention, which is we need to train what? Hundreds to save one life from suicide and?
Yes. We need to train hundreds to save one life from suicide, thousands to save hundreds, and millions to save thousands. So I offer this training free of charge. People can reach out to me to take the training. Once they take the training, they will get a certificate that lasts for 3 years. They are a certified gatekeeper, which means they know how to save a life and what to do. They also get a QPR resource card, which I tell everybody, please print it out and know the resources in your area. Because somebody asked me in training one day, they said, Ms. Fonda, how do you keep from panicking when you're helping someone? It's simple. Know your resources on the front end, from an EAP, an employee assistance program at your job, to the crisis mobile team or the CIT officers, crisis intervention team officers. But if you know your resources, it helps you to stay calm when you're helping somebody. So I urge everyone, please, to take the QPR training. Don't wait until something happens, because we are a reactive society when it comes to mental health and suicide, and we need to be proactive to save a life.
Fonda, you're awesome. We will have you on again real soon. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for having me. And if anybody wants to reach out to me, they can email me at Fonda, FONDANC_40@yahoo.com, or they can find me on Facebook at Fonda Bryant, or they can find me on Instagram and Twitter as ProudMom72. But thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am. I'm Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan, and thanking all of you for joining us. Tune in next week as we focus on other organizations or individuals doing great things in our community right here on Better Living. So long, everybody.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.